to check. I, Shuso, Jikai Shin Kam, sit here before you. In all my human naked vulnerability, clad only in the Buddha's robe, with the support of you, the Sangha. This Sangha includes so many people I love. My teachers, my whole Jukai group is here. Many, many old friends, people, pilgrims that I journeyed to Japan with. And lots of bright new faces, especially young faces. It gives me so much hope. So, I believe it was Norman asked on the first day, why are you here? It's a good question. So how is it that I come to be here? Well, there's a long answer and there's a short answer. Or I should say a broad answer and a more current answer. The broad answer is that I, like all of you, am life, begetting life, begetting life in the constantly recycling cosmic dust. Also, I also think that perhaps it's a bit destiny. You know, it's the question are you seeking the way, or is the way seeking you? And I actually believe it's a co-creative process. The more current answer of why I'm here as Shuso was Kate asked me. And it was at the opening of the practice period last year. And she said, now, I don't want you to take any anxiety on about this, but you might, she said, Michael and I have been talking, we thought maybe you might consider being Shuso. Well, that came actually at a good point in my life, because my 66th birthday had happened a few months before this. And I woke up on that birthday, and a voice was going through my head, and it said, what are you waiting for? And I thought to myself, well, that's true. What am I waiting for? When will there ever be a more better opportunity to do the things that I know deeply inside I should do, but I like to vacillate? And I sort of decided, well, maybe it's time to try doing that a little less and try doing the things that I really deeply know I should be doing a bit more. So on that notion, I went out and bought a fully electric car. And then, as I said, a few months later, Kate asked me, and she also asked whether I would be Norman's Jisha. And I said yes to the Jisha, and I thought, well, I'll think about the Shuso a bit. And by the end of this retreat last year, I said, yes, I will be Shuso. And I also said I would do a way-seeking mind talk. Having said those things, I sort of tried to put them deeply out of my mind. And so the way-seeking mind came up in February. And it was quite torturous for me, actually. I spent a month of sort of re-examining everything in my life and just... Anyways, the way-seeking mind talk went fine. And I vowed to myself, listen, you're not going to do that again. When you are shuso, you're going to do it light. You're going to do it easy. So at the same time, I thought, well, really, this is an opportunity that will only happen once in this lifetime. So what do I really want to immerse myself in? What is the question that is in my life? What's central? And the central question in my life is, how do you combine your spiritual practice with your work in the world, with your engagement in the world, in a way that they complement, they nurture each other, they strengthen each other? And I thought, well, that should be really easy to do, because that's what I've spent my whole life doing. I've read all these books, I've worked in all these different jobs, so that shouldn't be a problem. And also, that question, so what are, this series that we did during the practice period was working with the world, practice with the world, engaged activity. I'm a little nervous. But what I found was it wasn't easy at all. It was actually really difficult. So the first way-seeking mind talk, or the Susha way-seeking mind talk, I found I was really quite rattled at doing it, but it went okay. I had a dream the night before that I was looking after this bird. Actually, it was Kate and Michael had given me this bird to look after in my hand. And every time I opened up my hand, the bird was falling apart. This wasn't a good sign. And I went in and I just talked to Michael, and Michael said, well, that's actually just exactly what's supposed to happen. That was also not a good sign. So... it was interesting also, they give you a script when you do the shuso. You have this script that you have to, there's a little play that happens the first night when you accept it. And in the play, you actually refuse to do it three times. And the first time, you have these lines that you memorize, and then Kate said, oh, and you have to make up the other two times. And so you thank the teachers for their assistance, and you know you've been at this a long time, but you're not ready. Those are basically the themes. So I went in, and I actually had no trouble whatsoever finding reasons why that was exactly true. And somebody afterwards said to me, they said, gee, you sounded really convincing. And I said, that's because I wasn't acting. That was the truth. And also, the words I have to memorize for tomorrow, they also ring like they have come directly out of my heart and soul. So I think that perhaps maybe everybody who goes through this has somewhat the same feelings. The series on practicing with the world is at a time that I think it's immensely important that we all look at what is happening in the world and what it is that we can do about it. What is it? What is it that we? What small thing can we do to make a future that we would like for ourselves, for all the other beings on this earth? But I kept coming up against my own personal limitations. Very aware of the fact that I am so flawed. I have great expectations and don't meet them very often. And I kept coming up with this idea of how myself and everything else was broken. It's just broken. And I remember that there is a description somewhere in the Buddhist texts that we should look at our life like it's a goblet, a crystal goblet, and it's smashed. So the question is, now what? And this idea of brokenness and the broken bodhisattva, not the bodhisattva that is able to save all beings, just the one that tries. Leonard Cohen, dearly beloved Leonard Cohen that just died a week ago, he wrote the song Hallelujah. And the song begins that David played a sacred chord and it pleased the Lord. And that image and the warrior king sings Hallelujah. And that image, David is the greatest Jewish king there was, and he's found the note and he's playing it for the Lord, and the Lord likes it. And that's the heroic image. But then he goes on and he said, but you don't like music, do you? And you tied me to a kitchen chair and you broke my crown and cut my hair, and from my lips you drew Hallelujah. Well, that's the bodhisattva I can relate to. The need to be able to apply yourself when you really don't feel like you have the capacity, when things seem so completely overwhelming that, you know, really, where is the hope? And I started thinking about faith and trust. And what was it that I could put faith and trust in? Well, I have a lot of faith and trust in Michael and Kate. But that's a sort of deferred faith and trust. It's not that they don't totally completely deserve that, but it was that it's somewhat easier to put that faith and trust outside myself. And but if you know, really, in order to really engage, you've got to find something inside yourself. You've got to find it. You've got to find it in also something larger than yourself at the same time. Because obviously, we're all really limited. So what do I have faith in? I do have faith in the Buddha. I have faith that love is, in the end, the strongest force there is. I do have faith in the human race. You know, I was thinking about how giving birth is probably about the most painful thing that you can do. And yet there are 7.5 billion people on this planet. So our ability to endure pain is a great deal higher than we give ourselves credit for. I have faith in the Sangha, that it can support us, all of us, both our Sangha here, but the whole world as Sangha, all the myriad beings that are, our lives wouldn't be possible, we wouldn't actually be alive. Actually, this body is about 80% bacteria. It's actually, you know, when you think of the eye, it's actually not, there isn't a being. We're billions, zillions of beings all working together. And if they stop working, you're dead. I also think it's really necessary to have faith for the future. I just have a new grandchild. And as a matter of fact, I've got her picture in my pocket. And I think that, you know, I don't think we get to give up. I don't think we get to despair. We have to try our best. We have to try our best for all of the young that are coming into this world. They all deserve a happy and a healthy place to grow up. One of the things we did in the class, the sort of last exercise that we did, is something I sort of invite you to do also. Norman was saying this is actually an old Mahayana tradition, but it's something I found in a book by Joanna Macy called Act of Hope. And in Act of Hope, she said, you know, if you've taken the Bodhisattva vows, which we all have done over and over again, if you've taken them at this point, then perhaps you've taken those vows throughout eternity. This isn't the first time you're here taking those vows. You've taken them over and over and over again, and this is just your re-embodiment of those vows. And so that means that whoever you are, whatever your conditions are, you're absolutely, totally perfect to live those vows. All your limitations, all your warts, and that's all part of your path. So she goes on to say that, put yourself 35 years into the future and think about the world you'd like to see. Now, for me, I'm not even going to be alive. In some ways, that's a bit easier, to tell you the truth. And throw out an intention. Throw out an intention that that is the world you're going to pull yourself towards. It's sometimes described like throwing out a fishing hook and reeling yourself in. And then, because that intention is, of course, it's not a goal. You can't reach it. It's just the direction. And then think of the next thing you can do, whatever, the next little thing you can do that helps to pull you towards that. And just keep doing that. Just keep working your edge. Be willing to move a little bit out of the comfort. Not so much so that it's traumatizing, but, in order to really do something, you have to move out of being comfortable and secure a bit, and then move a little bit further. And if everybody does that, if everybody tries just that hard, and they hold to the highest intention that they can think of, we really can make a good world. Because it's already perfect. I still have 10 minutes. So, what would the Buddha want? This week has been a wonderful week because I've had two responsibilities that I've totally really enjoyed. One of them is the wake-up bell. And the wake-up bell is wonderful because I kept going around thinking, I'm waking up the Sangha. That's exactly what I want to do. I want to wake up the Sangha. And what does the Buddha want us to do? Wake up. And the second one was the keeping the time for the food. And that's also something that is so dear to me. Food. Nurturing, feeding. So maybe that's what we need, that maybe that's all we need to do. We just need to wake up and nurture. Nurture ourselves, nurture each other, nurture the planet. All we need to do is love. May our intention equally extend to every being and place. With the true merit of the Buddha's way, beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to end them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.